Let me just begin by explaining a little bit as far as some resource that's available. I am, hopefully it's all coming out, we'll see, but I am recording today's teaching time, and so we will have those available on a single CD, but in MP3 format. And so if you want to go ahead and purchase and buy that today, you can do that over at the table, and then we will mail it to you when we get those done in a couple weeks, if that makes sense. Also, just to try to clear up a little confusion on some of the resources, my Power of Joy class from earlier this year, is available on a single CD. That is all 8 lessons plus 2 lessons I did on Share Emmanuel, which is in part what I'm doing today, though there's some additional teaching stuff on it that I've had to whittle out and cut out for time's sake. So you'll have some overlap in the last 2 sessions on that if you choose to get that resource. And then I do have my recovery manual for men, my New Hope for Sexual Integrity. And that is a manual that I've written to apply recovery principles and especially the joy and the life model and the brain principles into helping men recover from pornography and other sexual bondage issues. And that's kind of my, that's kind of my big work, if that makes sense. And then the other resources are different life model resources, and I'll be glad to try to answer some questions for you, but unfortunately today we don't have time for me to spend a lot of time on that, if that makes sense. But this afternoon, and very glad you're back, glad you made it back. I know getting back from lunch at these kind of things is always hard, especially when you connect with people you don't see real often and you get a chance for great conversations. So I'm glad you've made it back. But where I'm going to want to draw your attention is if you will find in your handout this Emmanuel process flowchart. And I hate to tell you how much time I have in that stupid thing. Because there are a million arrows and boxes I could draw out of this. So the very first thing I want to tell you about this flowchart is it is far from complete. And so the balance I tried to strike is a balance that, well, let me just be honest with you. I hate flowcharts. I can't tell you how many times I've been at conferences or trainings or different things and somebody hands me a flowchart and I take one look at it and I say, my brain does not comprehend that. So what I went for here was simple. And unfortunately, at the cost of simple, sometimes is real important things that get left out. So I give you this flowchart with a significant pause of letting you know that it is not complete. In fact, somebody was just asking earlier, so they saw Carl's book over there, I think it's 700 some odd pages, and said, so how are you teaching this in a few hours when Carl's got a 700 page book? And it's because I'm not. I'm giving you a very brief introduction, if that makes sense. But I'll just go ahead and share a little of my belief in that regard, too. Is Emmanuel prayer is a lot like Scripture or a lot like the ocean. And what I mean by that is that there are depths to it that no matter how many years, how much time, how much work you put into exploring it, you will find more depths. But there's also some shallow beach areas that anybody can play in. And guess what? The more you play in it, the more comfortable you get, the more skills you build, and the more capable you are to get into the deeper waters. And so that's my encouragement for you today, is that Jesus wants to meet with you. He wants to be with you. He wants to reveal his presence to you. And so don't be intimidated by the depths, but enjoy what you're ready for now. And the other real cool part about it is that if you will follow Jesus' lead, Guess where he will keep you? He will keep you where you're able to thrive. So if all you can do is splash around in 6 inches of water, guess where he's glad to meet with you in? 6 inches of water. And as you grow over time, he will lead you into deeper places. And so from a resource standpoint, I do point to Carl's book. That one is like hot off the press. Those copies are all signed because we bought a case from his original deal. And Carl really wrote that to be a resource manual. He doesn't fully expect everyone to pick it up and read it cover to cover, but to be able to use the indexes and when you get stuck. Because like, for example, in my flow chart that I have here, I really don't deal much with blockages. I don't deal much with, okay, how do you work around things? This is a basic process when everything goes really well, with the safety net of being able to go back to appreciation so that you don't end in a stuck place. And so as we begin this afternoon, as I begin walking you through how we will go with this, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. My slide's not there. But appreciation is going to be our safety net, and I can't repeat that too often. But where we're going to go this afternoon is, in a little bit, I'm going to release you to get into groups of 3 or 4. If you really need to do 5, that's okay. But I discourage 5 because then you may not have time to get to everybody. At the same time, 5 could be an advantage if you have several people who are hesitant or reluctant and they don't want to engage one of the roles. So if you or someone in your group that you're with wants to just be an observer and that's all they want to do today, then it might be good for you to have a 4th or a 5th person. The best groups, I believe, are going to be groups of 3. Because then you will have time for each of you to go through and rotate through the roles, and each of you have time for a good connection. Does that make sense? And so with that, here are the roles that we're going to use today. The first role is that of facilitator. And facilitator is a word that I've wrestled with on which word to use, and I think it's the appropriate word. It's not a guide. It's not a director. It's facilitator. In fact, one of my goals whenever I facilitate a manual prayer is to try to get out of the way as much as I can. I have a number of people that I do a manual prayer for that I jokingly say that I go in the room, I roll out the ball, and I let them and Jesus play, and I get out of the way. And that's wonderful. Now, every once in a while, they need me to step in and help them get refocused or ask a question. But the more I can stay out of the way and let them go with Jesus wherever he leads them, the more successful I have been. So keep that in mind. Because what your job is when you are in the facilitator role is to try to just help them stay on the flowchart. Help them, if they get stuck, to come back to appreciation. And we're going to walk through the flow chart in a minute, okay? But then, you probably want to write these down someplace. The most common promptings you will be asking the participants are the question, do you sense Jesus' presence? Now, I didn't do that much with Morgan, for example, because it was very clear that she had Jesus' presence. Although, did you notice in her session that when she first saw Jesus in her workplace, I asked her, is he clear there? You know, how does that feel? And she said, well, it still feels a little bit fuzzy. Okay, so what that told me was that she sensed his presence, but not in its fullness. And so that gave us a place to press into. So the question, do you sense Jesus' presence? And then the second question that you're going to come up with often is, to prompt them to ask Jesus, what is preventing you from sensing his presence? In other words, what's in the way? Or like the disciples on the road to Emmaus, what is preventing you from recognizing Jesus? And so when you ask someone to ask Jesus what's preventing them, often they'll get a picture or a word or something and it'll come out. And from there, you can say, okay, Jesus, what do you want them to know about that? All right? So as a facilitator, you want to listen for the Spirit's promptings and help the participant to just move through the steps. Avoid directing or giving words or images as prompts. Now, I will tell you that quite often when I'm leading someone in a manual prayer, I'll get a real strong image. Or I'll get a very clear word or direction of where we're going. And when that happens, I'll do one of two things. I'll either just hold on to it, and it's amazing how often I'll get it, and then in a little bit, they'll come out with it themselves. And so then my telling them, yeah, I've been there, that came up for me several minutes ago, is often very confirming to them. Or sometimes I'll just say, well, hey, I've got a real strong image in my mind. Would you ask Jesus if he wants me to share that with you? And sometimes they get a quick answer of yes, and I share it, and it helps us move along. And sometimes they say no, and I'm like, well, Jesus, don't you know where we're going? And yet it's really good. So I want to encourage you to resist the urge of directing, but instead be willing to trust the path and trust where Jesus is taking it. All right. The second role, as I mentioned before, is really, or there are multiple roles, could be filled by one person or multiple people. And these are the roles of the petitioner. And that just means that everyone who is not facilitating, your first and most important job is to be lifting up the participant and the facilitator in prayer, asking God to give them clear direction, asking for the participant to experience Jesus' presence, asking for the facilitator to sense God's promptings on questions to ask and where to speak into the process. And as a petitioner or an observer, let me strongly discourage you from acting on the impulse to offer things in the middle of the session. What we found, or at least my experience has been, that when you have multiple people offering input, it's hard to stay moving in the same direction. Now, with that said, if you get a strong word or image, write it down. Make a time stamp on it, or at least a reference so you know when it came. Because what you'll find is, it's amazing how often the observers will get an image or a word or a sense of something, and then a little bit later, the participant will have the same thing, and then when you're talking about it later, there's just such confirmation when they find out that the very image that I talked about, someone else had before. Okay? Another aspect of that is a recorder. It's really helpful for someone to take notes, to just make an outline of what was said, what happened, etc., so that the person after the session will have something that they can go back and look at. All right? And then the other role, as we've already talked about here, is to be a lifeline holder. In fact, one thing I'm going to ask you to do is when you're in your groups, we're going to get you to share your appreciation names, and we're going to have somebody in the group write those down in big letters at the top of a page or on their separate sheet of paper or something, so that if the participant gets stuck, you can remind the facilitator, here's their lifelines, as a way of keeping people in good places. And then with that, as petitioners, as lifeline holders, it's also really helpful to pray against any condemnation you hear or sense. One of the key verses for me in doing a manual prayer is Romans 8:1. There is therefore no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. So whenever I hear words or pressure or things that are of condemning nature, I know that the enemy is trying to distract. The enemy is trying to derail the process. And when I hear condemnation, what I typically do is I just pray against it. But then here's the really cool part too. But as you pray against it, ask Jesus to reveal what the enemy is afraid of. Because if he's bringing in a message or image or something of condemnation, it means that he's getting scared that you're getting someplace. And he's trying to protect something. And guess what? That's why God's let him do it at that point. Because he knows that if we can work around and get behind what he's trying to defend, then there's great breakthroughs available. All right? So those are the roles. The participant, obviously, the participant's role is to relax and allow Emmanuel to take him or her wherever he wants. Participant's job, as we demonstrated with Morgan, is to share whatever comes to mind as he or she is prompted to ask Jesus questions and to seek for his presence. What's real important here is don't edit your thoughts. Now, we all do it to a certain degree, but don't edit your thoughts. If a thought comes to you, just speak it. If you see a purple gorilla, describe the purple gorilla. No matter how unrelated it may seem at the moment, if you're asked to ask Jesus a question and something comes to your mind, just describe it. And I can't tell you how many times even describing nothing has helped. I've had people will ask something and they'll, what are you getting? Well, nothing. Okay, well, what does nothing look like? Well, describe nothing to me. And they'll start describing darkness or a black wall or yada, yada. And as they describe it, then things begin to click. So whatever comes to your mind as the participant, just try to relax and speak whatever comes. Now, with that in mind, we know that there are some things that are too sensitive of a nature, or that are, how do I put it, or that may affect or impact others. For example, in my first Emmanuel session I did with Carl Lehman, one of his mentoring groups, I was there with a couple people from our ministry. And one of the things that came up for me was something related to another person in our ministry who was not there with us, but who was very well known by the other two who were. And so I was sitting there thinking, well, wait a second, I can't talk about that. They're not here and, you know, all that stuff. And then it suddenly dawned on me, wait a second. Jesus knows what he's put in my mind. And I can use he and it and pronouns and talk in a vague way. And Jesus will know exactly what I'm saying, and they won't, and that's okay. So in your groups, if something comes up that's too sensitive for you, or that maybe is about someone that they know, or anything like that, continue to try to describe it, but just do it in a way that is safe. Does that make sense? So here's what we're going to do. We're going to try to follow the flow chart. And when we start in a bit, I will start us off with a critical thing that's not on this, but is kind of just a foundation for it. And that is that I will begin by just praying and just setting the authority of Jesus over our time and space. Now, I know that there's a lot of different perspectives on how the demonic world plays into things, how forces of evil, and et cetera, et cetera. Well, I don't begin to think I understand all that, but I do understand one critical thing, and that is Jesus is bigger and stronger and more powerful than all the forces of evil.
Amen.
And so from that, I believe that we can call upon his authority to reign over that. And so that's where I like to begin, is just by setting that authority, declaring our faith and trust in that authority, and then I kind of let Jesus deal with it. Now, I know that there may be some specific situations that need more than that. But, again, that kind of goes back to my ocean example a minute ago, too. That's probably deeper water than we're ready for today. And I think if we follow Jesus' lead, we will stay out of that deep water. Does that make sense? And so then where we'll go from there is the facilitator will pray and ask Jesus to remind the participant of their appreciations. Now, with that, what we want you to do is have the participant verbally express their appreciation to Jesus for one, two, or all three of their appreciations. And with that, to make sure that the facilitator and the observers and the lifeline holders write down the names of their appreciation so that they know how to get them back to safe waters. Okay? So on the top of the notes, write down their appreciation. Now here is a critical thing. Do not go any further if the participant does not have at least two solid appreciations. If they don't have at least two solid appreciations, spend the whole time praying for appreciation. Yes?
Do they have to be new, or can they be the ones you already?
They can be ones you used this morning. They could be ones from last week. The only thing that matters is that they have a sense of realness and that they're solid. Does that make sense? You might have a new one as you start out this afternoon, or you might use this morning's appreciations. It doesn't matter, just as long as you have some good lifelines to begin with. And so after the appreciation, after they express their appreciation, then what we want to do is we want to check for Jesus' presence. Okay? To ask them, do you have a sense of Jesus' presence with you? And to invite them to ask Jesus to give them that sense of presence. You know, Jesus, could you help me perceive your presence right here and right now? And that may go as far as asking Jesus to reveal to them where his presence is for them in the room. You know, Morgan had that beautiful image of Jesus sitting there and she was sitting on his lap. Okay, sometimes people get a clarity of that. Sometimes people just get a sense of, you know, I feel like he's all over the room and I just have this safety here. Okay, ask them to invite Jesus to reveal his presence for them. And if they get that sense, then you can move into the next step. But if they do not have a sense of Jesus' presence for them right here and right now, then you loop back. And you go back and you spend some more time on appreciation. And after spending more time on appreciation, then you come back and you ask that sense again. But don't move forward until the individual has some sense of Jesus being here for them now. Right? And if unable to find that, as I said, return to your appreciations. But then next, ask the question, or prompt them to ask Jesus, what do you want to show me today? We want to put the ball in Jesus' court. We want him driving the bus. And so we just ask him, Jesus, where do you want to take us today? And then Give them 15 seconds, 15 to 30 seconds at most. And then remind them that their job is to describe anything that comes to their mind. Now, the reason you give them about 15, no more than 15 to 30 seconds is because that keeps them from just keeping it internally in their head. You know, one reality is that whenever you try to process something through just in your own head, it's like being on a roundabout and not finding the exits. But it's amazing when we start describing what's going on in our head, how we begin seeing the pathways out of the loops. And so describing whatever you're sensing, hearing, feeling, seeing, etc., describing any memories that come out, what that does is that starts opening us up to the process. And so then after they describe it, then you ask something to the effect of, okay, Jesus, what do you want this person to see, hear, sense, feel? So you start asking Jesus more directly. Now, I couldn't do this in this flow chart, but you will often interact off of things they've already said. So if they say, yeah, I have this memory of being in third grade and we're on the beach, say, okay, ask Jesus, Jesus, what do you want this person to know about that memory on the beach? What do you want them to focus on? What do you want them to see? What's important here? And then from there, again, you have them describe anything that comes to mind. Again, anything. And just see what Jesus does with that. And then after they describe whatever comes to mind, when you get a sense that they've described it fully or full enough, then you go back and you check again for their sense of Jesus' presence. So you say, do you still sense Jesus' presence for you? Do you still have that sense of Him holding you or whatever they experience Jesus' presence? You check back and ask if they still have that. Because what will often happen at this stage is that sometimes memories, a painful memory, or a memory of a time when they felt very disconnected or alone will come up. And so when you ask that question, do you have a sense of His presence, they'll often go, no, I've lost it. And so that provides you an opportunity to ask Jesus, okay, can you ask Jesus to remind you where He is for you? Or oftentimes, just the asking of the question will cause them to go, oh yeah, He's still right over here beside me. But it brings that back into their awareness. Okay? Now, this is also a place where it's very helpful to ask the participant to pay attention to how their body feels. Okay? To pay attention to how their body feels, and that's that box that's kind of hanging out here all by itself. It really applies at every stage, but especially when you're checking for the sense of Emmanuel's presence. Because for one thing is, sometimes people think they've lost His presence, but when they start paying attention to their body, they realize, oh wait, I'm in an appreciation seat. Because you remember we use the analogy that the person with their back to God can't really know God's there, but they feel the warmth of Him. And so oftentimes just asking that question will allow them to go, okay, I don't see Him right now, but I can tell by how my body feels that I do have a sense of His presence. Now, if they have lost the sense of presence at this stage or at any stage, then here's an opportunity to go back to your appreciations. Why are my slides not matching my notes? You guys can forget the slides. Let's work on our flow chart. Okay. So when they check for the presence, and if they can't find the presence, then one thing that's often really helpful is to have them go to their appreciation again, but this time don't do the full loop. This time just ask them to go to an appreciation and then bounce back and forth between the stuck place and the appreciation place. And I have used this simple diagnostic or troubleshooting tool probably as much as any other. Because it's amazing what happens is somebody, you know, let's say they're in a childhood memory of being stuck at the blackboard and feeling humiliated, and they just get stuck there. Okay, what's your appreciation? Well, I had that Sunday sunrise where it's just so beautiful, okay? All right, well, go to your Sunday sunrise, all right? Okay, now can you go back to the blackboard? Oh, yeah, yuck. Oh, I hate this. Can you go to Sunday? Okay, Sunday sunrise, okay. Oh, yeah, I feel good again. Okay, we'll go back to the blackboard. And it's like the brain gets confused with feeling bad and feeling good. Or as Jim Wilder describes it, it's like when you try to focus on two things at once, all of a sudden they kind of morph and blur together. And it's amazing how often doing the bouncing back and forth will suddenly open something in the brain and you're like, oh, okay. Jesus was right behind me when I was at the blackboard. And so by bouncing back and forth and asking that question, Jesus, where were you? Where are you? That will often resolve that issue. If it doesn't, then loop back up to appreciations. Again, appreciations is our safety net. But then if once they get a sense of Jesus' presence, then you go back in again and ask, Jesus, what do you want me to see, hear, or sense? Okay, so let's say they get a sense of Jesus being with them at the blackboard. So you say, okay, Jesus, what do you want me to see about this memory? What do you want me to focus on here? And they may look at that memory and go, oh, I see Jesus. He's got his hand on my shoulders. He knows how hard this is for me. He's sad that my dyslexia is kicking in and that my teacher and kids in the class don't understand that. But he understands it. Or they may have a sense of Jesus speaking to him and says, no, you're really smart. This is just a place where something's in the way. And so to focus on it from a sense of, okay, Jesus, what do you want me to see, hear, sense, etc.? And then, as we do all the time, describe anything that comes to mind. Describe anything that comes to their brain, any pictures, any words, any feelings. And just continue to navigate with them and allow Jesus to reveal to them whatever he wants to reveal to them. And then continue to go back and forth with those questions. So, Jesus, what else is there? Jesus, what do you want me to focus on here? And have them describe anything and everything that comes to mind. And then, and I hope you noticed this when I did this actually twice, maybe three times with Morgan, is never assume you're done. I can't tell you how many times we've had a really cool, amazing Emmanuel connection, and you just think, well, I can't get any better than that. And then I remember Carl's words to say, always be greedy. Always ask if there's anything else. And I can't tell you how many times when we thought we've already, you know, had the cake and everything's wonderful, and we ask, is there anything else? And then he puts this beautiful layer of cream cheese icing on it, and it, if you thought it was good before, now it's just incredible. So always ask him if we're done. Ask Jesus, is there anything else? And let him be the one. in fact, with Morgan. She said, I think I'm done. I said, okay, well, ask Jesus. Because so oftentimes that's the participant's response. Oh, yeah, this is enough. I'm like, well, just double check with Jesus because he might have something else. And then once, if something else comes up, then you go back and you do the loop again. Okay, Jesus, this next image came up. So what do you want me to see, hear, sense, feel about that? And describe it. And then something else cool comes out. And then when you get to a place, okay, Jesus, that's really good. Is there anything else? And at some point, what he often says is something to the effect of, oh, I got a lot more for you, but this is enough for today. And when you get to that place, just take a little time and give him thanks. Just thank him for what he's shown you. Thank you for the tender places that he's touched or healed. And then find a time to tell your story to someone. And so what we're going to do today, and I'm going to give some time for some questions here before we break, is I'm just going to send you, take your chairs, move them around, go to different parts of the room, and step into these roles and pray with one another and just try it. And if anybody gets really stuck or in a really triggered place, I will be here so you can flag me or whatever and I'll come try to help troubleshoot, help you out of it. But let me just encourage you with that. When we did this back in Lawrence in the spring, I was absolutely unnecessary and unneeded for the whole time. Because it really is, how do I put it? While it can, while there, again, going back to that ocean analogy that fits so well, while there are complicated, difficult, deep places, most of it takes place in a way that any of us can do for and with one another. And another cool part about that is that Jesus always knows your time, your space, and your capacity. And the way this came home to me most clearly was one of the Thrive event years ago. About the third day, I sat in a different place. And I sat next to a couple that I had just barely met, didn't know anything about them, they didn't know anything about me. And Jim Wilder had us break up into groups of three, and so I ended up with them. And Jim started off by saying, okay, the participant this time is whoever is wearing the most blue. Well, I was wearing khakis and a green shirt or something like that, and the husband didn't have a stitch of blue on him, and the wife was in a blue dress. Okay, so it was very clear that she was to be the participant. So anyway, Jim starts praying, and he starts leading, and he says, tells the participant, okay, ask Jesus to remind you of a time when you were not able to perceive his presence. And I saw the woman as she was writing, and her writing got really hard and kind of intense, and she was getting agitated. And I thought, oh boy, this might be interesting. And so as soon as Jim released us, her first question to me was, are you married? Kind of in that tone. I'm like, yes, I'm married. And you could almost sense her saying, crap, I was hoping you'd say no, so I had a reason to not go here. And then she'd written some things, you know, we're in a triad right there, and she'd written some things, and I'm not trying to read over her, but in that context, it was impossible not to see a word or two. And I just stopped, and I said, well, can I share something about me? And I told her what I do, and that I run groups for men who wrestle with pornography and sexual addiction, and I do a lot of work with sexual abuse and different things of that nature. And she sighed, not sure if it was a sigh of relief or a sigh of oh crud, I really do have to go here. And so we went into an Emmanuel session where she went to a very dark place and where Jesus met her in one of her significant childhood sexual traumas. Now, I tell you that story because I believe it's a perfect example of Jesus knowing who was there for her. Her very loving, supportive husband was there for her. And myself, who had the experience and capacity to not be overwhelmed by what she was sharing, was there for her. I am thoroughly convinced if someone else had been part of their triad who had their own trauma in that area or did not have the capacity or the skill or what was needed to walk through that, that a different memory would have come up for her. And I tell you that story because I want you to know that Jesus knows who's in your group. And he will work with you on what level of water you and your people in your group are able to navigate. And here's what's really cool thing is he has amazing cool stuff for us in 6 inches of water and 300 feet of water. You know, that ocean analogy just came to me as I was teaching this morning, and it's so beautiful. Because in 6 inches of water, you may discover an amazing starfish. So if your session today stays in very shallow waters, guess what? It may still be just beautiful and amazing. And if your session goes into deeper waters, then know that Jesus knows that already, and he will go there with you. Now, one caveat there that I want to offer is that a very common thing that the enemy does is when we ask, where do you want us to go? Is oftentimes a really dark trauma memory will pop up. And I've seen it so frequently that I believe that it is one of the enemy's tactics of intimidation. He hates us connecting with Jesus. So if he can throw up our deepest trauma, our worst ever memory right off the bat, then guess what a lot of people do? Well, we just shut down. But guess what? Jesus has a way around that. And just as a word of encouragement to you, it's not by prying you open. Jesus is very gentle. So what I encourage people to do if one of those really bad places pop up is to just ask the question, Jesus, is this really where you want us to go? Or is this the enemy's attempt at intimidation? And through the years, I found that probably 8 to 9 out of 10 people, when I ask that question with them, end up immediately going someplace else that's very safe and capacity building. And then 1 or 2 people, they'll stay in that trauma place and will work there. Now, I say that 1 or 2, I think that's also a higher percentage for me because God's gifted me in that area. But I'll also tell you that the times that we have gone to the trauma places right off the bat, we've gone through to the other side and it's been beautiful. So Jesus will not, if he is really leading, if you're following his lead, he will not take you places more difficult than you can handle or that the people in your group will handle. So just check with him. Jesus, is this really where you want us to go? And so what we'll do is we'll break up into our groups, and you in your group, you'll just decide who's doing what role first, and you'll take time and you'll go through a session with that person. And then when you're done, you can take a break. And then you can swap roles, or you can dialogue about it. Really, your group is in control over what you do, if that makes sense. And then what I want us to do is come back together at 20 after 3. So that gives us almost an hour and a half. And at 20 after 3, then we'll spend some time doing Q&A. We'll do some time talking about our sessions. And then most importantly, I'm going to open the floor up to you to tell your stories of Emmanuel, to give testimonies of how Jesus has met you in difficult places. And then we'll call it a day. So, questions about the process or about how we're going forward from here? Yeah.
Since there's five roles and there's only three people, how would you...
Well, that's what I said, is that those, the petitioner, the role record keeper, and the lifeline holder, those three roles can be done by one person, or they can be done by separate people, depending on how many people you have in your group. Yeah?
Do you recommend gender mixing or not mixing?
Gender mixing is okay if you're okay with that. If that makes sense. And I'll tell you right up front that God often uses that. But at the same time, I know that some people feel real uncomfortable with that. And if anyone's uncomfortable with it, get in a group that's just your gender, and that's perfectly okay. Some people's spouse feels really uncomfortable if you're in a mixed gender group. And if that's the case, stay in your own gender. Okay. Now, that does remind me of something I'll mention too. If your spouse is here, think honestly whether your spouse being in your group is helpful or intimidating. Some couples, some individuals do better with the support of their spouse there. Some couples, their spouse being in the group will make them that much more anxious, and they're better off not being with their spouse. So whatever is good for you, do what's good for you.
What is that simple tool or statement you can say if there's like a blockage?
A blockage? If there's a blockage, the most important question is, okay, Jesus, what's in the way? Help us see what's in the way. And then as the person describes whatever comes to their mind, sometimes just the description of it removes the blockage. And then with the blockage, ask the question, okay, Jesus, what do you want? Is there anything you want us to do to remove the blockage? And sometimes what he wants us to do is just ask him to remove it. And sometimes he wants us to break a vow. Sometimes he wants us to see the lie that we're believing. And blockages is one of those things covered in the 700-page book a lot. So blockages are complicated, but one solution to that is just asking Jesus what's in the way and how do you want us to navigate around it. Another part of that is doing the bouncing with appreciation. Bouncing with appreciation often just blows blockages out of the way. And we don't know how it happened, but they're gone and that's good. Does that help a little bit, Marion? One person initially, and then depending on time and willingness of each of the people in the group, ideally, again, three people. We can probably, most groups will be able to do all three in an hour and a half. Because sessions will sometimes, in these contexts, will typically not be real long. Kim.
Mm-hmm.